This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to another edition of Two States in One Story. And boy, I think we have two stories in one state for you this time as Diane Houston and I sit around and discuss what I found to be just one of the more compelling stories, I think, that we're going to talk about this entire time, Diane. And it's about a daughter who was killed by her father because mom said get rid of the baby, basically, is what we're kind of getting out of this, and the father didn't know what to do, so what the hell, I'm going to throw her in the river and kill her.
Yeah, wicked stepmother, to be specific. I almost called it that, actually. I was like, should I call this wicked stepmother? And then I thought, well, I mean, she was pretty awful, to be clear. But is she the, you know, is she the one that did the deed? No. Yeah, I mean, I could not believe this story when I ran across it. And we've talked to, you know, we know we have a lot of people that like the murder scene and the gore. My students, oh my God, crime and mafia. That's all they care about. So this is right up their alley too. But I mean, what a crazy story that actually kind of broke American history for all the wrong reasons.
Well, and that's kind of what I want to talk to you about, because this is really a two-part story. It's about a father who murders a child, but it's also about the execution of the father that has a big kind of story. But in order to get to the execution of the father, we need to go back to 1897 on that cold fall day that everybody is talking about and wonder how a baby washed up on shore of the Missouri River when two folks out hunting, minding their own business, all of a sudden came across her.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was just, and it happened like, you know, we're sitting here in October, right at Halloween. And here we are talking about something that happened in October of 1897. And I feel like parts of this are something that could have happened yesterday. And other parts, I'm like, how is this possible? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, the little girl, you know, they were hunting and then, you know, saw something weird in the water and, you know, kind of washed up on shore and in a couple feet, you know, a couple inches of water. And one of the hunters went over to kind of move it and, you know, turns it over and realizes it's not a bundle of clothes or, you know, a discarded, you know, bag. It's literally the body of a approximately 3-year-old little girl, which is just horrifying.
Yeah.
And of course, and it looked like just, of course, and they didn't have the technology of, of understanding basic for autopsies at the time, but they knew that she had been in the water for a while because she was super, you know, bloated and all that. So they got, of course, they go, you know, running to the scene and, you know, the sheriff gets involved. And this happens near Randolph on the other side of the river. So on the Kansas City, Missouri side, on the Jackson County side. And so Jackson County, of course, the sheriff and the police are all there, but they don't know where this girl came from. And it's happening kind of right across the street from like where Randolph would be. So that's going to be on the east side of downtown Kansas City. Just
right,
up,
basically
kind of
up by
River.
The casino there.
Yeah, by the casinos.
Like where Harrah's used to be and where Sam's Town used to be, kind of that area of town.
Isn't that where you go hunting, Bob?
Usually,
I mean, duck hunting.
Right.
So they're up there. And so this is like insane. And of course, they're expecting without any doubt that there's got to be a report of a missing child. I mean, how would you not have a report of a missing child? And they, you know, greatly understood that when no one came forward, that there was more, you know, obviously to the story. What they look at, of course, for evidence, too, is that these police officers are looking and she's fully clothed in nice clothing, you know, a heavy wool jacket. And they kept saying it looks like she was taken care of. So they're not looking for some, you know, backwoodsman who's traveling through, you know, Kansas City on his way from, you know, wherever and, you know, kid maybe hit their head and they didn't know what to do and they threw the kid in the water. There, it looked like the kid came from some substance of money, because the clothes, you know, had been knitted and altered and all of that. So this is on October 17th. And so time goes on and, you know, they're still looking for this, you know, child's parents. And it was neighbors, you know, this is one of those things, you know, even back in the day, people talked. And it was neighbors up in Liberty, Missouri, just outside of downtown Liberty, that had already reported abuse of a child to the police up there. And of course, communication was not as good as it is today. So the Liberty guys don't know what's going on in Kansas City. So when the newspaper headlines kept running and trying to describe this child, you know, about 3 years old and, you know, was wearing this, they actually did a drawing in the newspaper describing the clothes. And it was the clothes that ID'd the kid. So the neighbors had already reported that there was abuse. They thought through the stepmother, which we'll talk about her in a minute. Mm-hmm. They thought maybe there was abuse going on in the household. And so they'd already reported it. And then they see the clothes. They're like, those are the clothes of little Belle. And then the next thing you know, they're going to the police. The police go and talk to, you know, they're looking around trying to figure out who's, you know, who this child is. And they get the grandma, who's like kind of the adopted grandma, which is a whole other, you know, it's straight Missouri talk on this one. It's like, right. You know, related in multiple ways. But they go and talk to her and she's like, oh, my God, that's my granddaughter's clothes. And it's like, okay, but why didn't anybody report this child missing? And so they immediately, I mean, they always blame the man. And this is back in the day. Let's remember, we've talked about this before. This is back in the day where they didn't do like hard investigation. They didn't have to like pull the evidence and have the fingerprints and then, you know, have a warrant signed by a judge. None of that crap was happening. It was go arrest and ask questions later. Like they did not do what they do now. And so they go and arrest the father, whose name was William Carr. He was about 39 years old at the time. His background is nothing but trash. And
didn't
I don't mean
he marry
that.
His wife's stepson's brother's cousin's brother or something like that,
it
too,
is
with
so,
all of this?
Yes, it is so confusing. Yeah, William Carr, he had been married before. And so he, it's one of these, again, wild stories. He is sent, the bulk of it is this. He's, you know, up in Indiana living there. His parents die. He's not educated. He has like no family, you know, all this. And a woman takes him in. Her name is Marianne. She takes him in and adopts him. Okay. And then she ends up actually moving to Clay County, Missouri and gets married to another guy whose last name is Stevens. So his stepmom is this Marianne Stevens character. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, he's going out. He never learns to read and write. He is just rugged backcountry. They called him a backwoodsman. I didn't put that in my article, but they did. You know, non-educated man who's just, you know, making enough money to scrape on by. And he ends up in Kansas working for, or, you know, working for the railroad. And he knew his stepmother's, he knew his stepmother's brother, who was living there, Hiawatha, Kansas.
Right.
And he meets this woman and marries her, who happens to be his stepmother's, niece. He marries his stepmother's niece.
Which, you know, I read that a few times when we were doing kind of our quote-unquote show prep for this. And I keep going back. I'm like, am I reading this right way? But when you start to think about it, your stepmother's niece, that's no relation to you.
They're not blood related.
No, not at all. Right. It's weird, right?
It's awkward, but it gets even weirder.
But, you know, like, all right, I get it. It's not real family. It's, you know, extended family. Ha, ha, ha. And move on. And you know, back in the 1800s, the population smaller, so maybe it's
smaller, you know, less slim pickings.
Yeah, not a lot of options out there.
No,
for
them,
right?
So he's in Hiawatha, marries this woman named Jenny, and they have two kids. They have two kids, one of them born in I think 1892, and her name is May, and then they have Belle. Okay, and Belle was born in 1894. And unfortunately, so they're married and living in Hiawatha. And there were reports later on that he was abusive to his wife. Right. I'm just going to throw it out there. He was not a wonderful husband. I tend to believe them. Mm-hmm.
This guy seems like a real heel, you know, heel.
Like, yeah. And he looks like one. If you look at the drawings, you're like, that tracks. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he marries her and they, you know, abuse and there's. The family is very concerned. And then she passes away. It doesn't sound like any abuse from abuse or whatever, but she does die. So he's now a widow and he's got these two little kids. So what does he do? Of course,
marries again.
Yeah. Well, he first leaves the kids in Hiawatha. He's like, I'll be back. And then he goes to see probably his stepmom up in, you know, in the Liberty neighborhood, Clay Como-ish. He goes up to Clay County and he meets his stepmom or his adopted mom's, I mean, try to think of this. She had remarried again, you know. So he marries his adoptive mom's, I guess it would be like a step daughter-in-law.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So her husband had had children, her third husband, by the way, her third husband had had children in a prior marriage. And one of those children married this woman that he ends up, you know, hooking up with. So he ends up marrying this woman up in Clay County who has a son already. So her name is Betty.
Yeah.
I don't think her name was Elizabeth. Like she literally was born and was Betty.
Okay.
So Betty, she's got a son from her marriage before, and they get married. And so now they're living there. His original wife's family, that, you know, his the widow's family back in Hutch, they wanted to keep the kids. And he's like, to spite them, they felt like it was to spite him or to spite their relationship. He's like, no, I'm taking the kids. They're like, he's an abuser. We don't want him to have the kid. He takes the kids. He has every right to, right? Because he's the father. So he ends up taking the kids to Liberty, and it is it's less than a year later after this marriage that this child ends up in the river. And you got to ask yourself some questions. That's pretty fast, you know? And then also, like, if there's two kids, you know, at this point, there's a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and then her son, who's like 8 or 9, why is the littlest the problem? You know, like they didn't get rid of the other child, May.
Right.
So there were stories that circulated that basically his wife, the second wife, Betty, she was, she didn't want anything to do with her. She thought that she wanted too much of her attention. I'm like, she's three.
She's three. You know, it almost felt like this person was just tired of being a parent is ultimately what it sounds like to me. And
yeah.
She tells her husband, get rid of the kid, thinking he'll go down to market, basically, and find a home for this child, right?
And this is pretty early in Kansas City, where we did have, you know, organizations, orphan homes. I mean, that was a thing, you know, like you threw the kid lived in the orphan or a poorhouse or whatever. So she had said, get rid of the kid.
Right.
What that means and what she meant and what he did, I can't speak to that. I do think that there's probably those allegations of her behavior toward the child is probably accurate. So I don't think she was super innocent here, but he's like, okay. So like one morning he gets up, and this is a week before the body was found. He gets up and he dresses her in all the winter clothes. Like, you know, so she's dressed for heavy, you know, in a heavy coat. She's 3 years old, takes her on a 15-mile walk. Cause you know, he didn't have a car or a wagon.
Right.
A walk down to the river from Liberty, Missouri. I want everybody 3-year-old.
Right.
Now, of course, she can't walk the whole way. So he picks her up and she falls asleep part of the time. People, you know, witnessed him on the road with him. His original story when he was arrested was, well, I went down to the river and I found this guy who was going to Oklahoma. And I said, you want my kid? And the guy said, sure, I'll take your kid. And he's like, I'll mail you $12 a year to take care of
$12 a year.
$12 a year.
I can't do $12 a day.
That's how much your daughter's Starbucks costs.
Yeah, exactly. Like $12 a year. Oh my God.
Yeah. So this is on October 10th. So seven days before. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, I mean, so I gave him $12. I said, I'd mail him the money. And of course the officers, once they arrest him, are like, okay, since you know, where's the guy? You have to have his address. And he's like, oh, well, that's sorted. That didn't pan out.
No.
So the questioning did not go well. So within 24 hours, he's like, okay, I did it. And they're, of course, mortified. It's your own child. We have to remember how horrible this is.
Right.
So he married, you know, so he'd marry this woman. And within less than a year after their marriage, this child is dead. In the meantime, the little girl, I cannot believe this. They arrested you know, him, and he's locked up in jail. They actually moved him to Kansas City for two reasons. First of all, the crime, they didn't know where it occurred first. Mm-hmm. So they moved him back because the body was found in Jackson County. So they moved him originally to Kansas City, and he was in jail there, and they were worried about, you know, people coming to lynch the guy.
Oh, God, yes.
But believe it or not, I mean, there were crowds, but not that many. And so once he confessed and he admitted the crime happened on the Clay County side, they had to move him back up to Liberty. So he spent some time in Kansas City and then moved back up to Liberty. So when they start asking him questions about the crime, it becomes blatantly clear that there is some serious evidentiary problems here. So he admits that once he got to the river, you know, he at first was going to, I mean, he had carried, when he was carrying her, he admitted that he found like a piece of rope on the, you know, on the way and put it in his pocket. Like, and that's when he got the idea he was going to drown his kid. Mm-hmm. Like, what. Now, the autopsy revealed, and of course, you know, this was a long time ago. I don't know how accurate this stuff is, but she didn't have a lot of water in her lungs.
Which that was the interesting part to me. Like,
yeah,
did he kill her before he threw her in the river?
Yeah. And that's the other thing. They thought maybe, so they asked May, who was five. They were like, did you remember any violence or anything happening in the home and whatnot? And she said something about, you know, like she remembered that that May had maybe fallen into a, or been pushed into a loom, like just and hurt her head or something. Mm-hmm. And then Betty said, no, that injury on her head was a boil or something. I mean, like these excuses, you're like, a boy, what? But she had like a large laceration above her eye. And they don't know if it was, of course, they didn't have the technology. They don't know if it was postmortem or not. And then she was in the water for, you know, a week. And we're not talking about a minimal amount of water, or, you know, it's the Missouri River.
Right.
So preservation on this is, I can't even believe that she was still intact, to be quite honest. But
I know.
Anyway, so they looked at it into a lot of these things, but the police really thought, and the coroner thought, with other opinions, that she was dead when she entered the water. He never admitted to that. What he said he did, which is, I think, worse, honestly, because I'd rather hear she was unconscious or something, you know, is that he got to the riverfront and it's dusk. So it's getting dark outside, and because he walked 15 miles and he took that rope and he wrapped around her body. She was awake. He said, yeah, she was awake. She was awake. And tied a six pound rock to the rope and tossed her as far out as he could from like an 18 foot cliff next to the Missouri River.
Yeah.
What?
How did you do that to your child?
And how did those officers, I mean, I can't imagine being a detective sitting there. Like I could get rid of this guy real fast.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and they were, of course, are like, what did you do next? Like, you're expecting him to be like, I couldn't believe what I just did. Or he's like, well, I went to the, you know, to the nearest train station and boarded the train back to Liberty. What'd mm-hmm. you do when you got home? Went straight to sleep.
Yeah, went to bed.
What? And then the stupid wife, sorry, I'm not a fan of her. So the wife,
she's just as much to blame for all.
She is.
You know?
So he gets back, you know, you're not like, huh, what happened to the kid? She never asked, like, you know, Betty, she never asked, like, you know, what happened to May? You know, like,
never once. Where's the child?
No, like, no, where's the kid? And so, like, a week goes by, and at this point, they're reading the Star. He couldn't read, but he admit, you know, she even told the detectives, "Oh, I read the Star." You know, the paper allowed to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, give him his daily news or whatever. Right. And
if your child was missing, you would have seen all this.
And you saw the clothes,
somebody, and the clothing, and all yeah. this kind of stuff. You'd be like, "That's my kid." The fact that they didn't say anything makes both of them guilty of this thing.
It absolutely, and that is why it was baffling to me reading it and then trying to track it, and then also knowing we also back in the day, which is hard for us to comprehend today. Back in the day, it was like free for all at crime scenes. We've talked about this before. It's like so-and-so just got murdered inside the house, and it's like, all right, let the newspapers in, and then they're there doing their thing. I mean, they did not have any like containment of crime scenes at all, nor did they protect people who had been arrested for crimes from the media. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, let me make a statement, the deputy sheriff. It was, I'm going to, you know, if I'm a reporter, I'm going into the jail and I'm questioning the man who's been arrested. They let that happen. And so the papers are all telling all these different stories because he was talking to some people and he wasn't talking to other people. And so it's hard to know, I mean, to get a glimpse of the truth. But what was crazy, you know, is that Betty, you know, she's like, I never asked what happened to her. Well, okay. You know what I was about to say. Like, you never...
You didn't go to bed and say, "Where's Belle?"
Yeah, like, did you leave Belle with our in-law? What did you do?
Did you find somebody from Oklahoma that was willing to adopt her and take her?
Yeah.
Like, what? Where's? I mean, like,
no questions.
So it tells you she did not care about that child. Which again, I continue to go back to.
Or she was in on it.
Yeah. Or yeah, that as well. And there is that side of things. But I mean, you're talking about two stupid people that got together for a terrible, terrible crime.
For real.
Didn't know how to cover their tracks or anything about that, and didn't care.
No care at all. And then I think about the lifestyle. So this guy was like, you know, just a kind of a day laborer type character. And his wife, you know, and one of the quotes that was in the paper, again, something I didn't include the article that caught me. And I was like, oh, that sounds right. Is she was like, what do you mean you arrested him? What am I supposed to do now for a living? Like, oh, back to you again. I see. Right. I mean, so there's some truth to a lot of this. And I mean, and I was concerned at first, I couldn't figure it out. And I think I kind of did figure it out, but I was really concerned. Like, what happened to May? Like, this poor little girl lost her mom. And then her dad now got arrested for killing. And she's five. So right. Not to say that's still traumatic at any age, but you know, they let her go with his step, you know, with his adopted mother for a period of time. And I'm like, okay, I'm not sure I would have, because Betty would have still had access to her because that was Betty's relationship too, right? They knew each other right. before. So I'm like, why would you leave her with her? And so her, you know, his first wife's family wanted her. They were like, we'll take care of her out here. You know, we want to adopt her. And one of Jenny, his first wife's brothers, had moved to Kansas City, Kansas in Argentine. And he's like, I want to take her. Let me have her. So there was kind of like a mini, not a fight, but at least people wanted her. I'll put it that way.
Right.
And this is what's baffling to me. This guy has been locked up. He has admitted he has murdered his daughter.
Admitted it. I did it.
Admitted it.
Right.
And he's in the middle of possibly being executed because they've got to get to the trial, and they're letting him make the decision on where she's staying. I swear to you, this happened. How is this possible? How you're going to let this murderer like decide where the child's going? So when he said, I don't want her to go with her, you know, my first wife's family, they were like, okay. So they put her up for adoption. What? In the world. Now, I will say, though,
it's better to get her out of that family, too.
Okay. You know? Fair. Now, but we don't know how bad, we don't know how her family was. Like, right. I will say, you know, you're right. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they probably would have wanted to place her with, you know, whoever was the closest to her. But I feel like it really was surprising. So, and they also print way too much information like to hide somebody's identity. Then they don't do that now, but she was placed with a family somewhere in Missouri. Mm-hmm. So people from 48 states wanted her. And of course they did because it made national headlines.
Of course, yeah.
But I mean, still the point is that she got out of the situation, and I hope somebody knows what happened. If anybody knows, if your grandma or your great grandma happens to be named May and was born in Kansas in 1892, we need to talk.
Yes.
Might be her. But so then, like you said, what's even like if this story couldn't get weirder and more awful, is that, of course, the courts moved faster than they moved today.
Sure.
I'll just say that. Presumption of innocence. He admitted he was guilty. So up in Liberty, they're like, we're going to go pretty quickly to trial. And you go, why do you need a trial? Well, the law at the time said, even if you, you know, pled guilty to a crime, they still had you in, you could waive a jury trial, which he did. They still have you present witnesses, and the judge is going to decide what your sentence is, mm-hmm. right? So witnesses were presented, including her own family. Interestingly enough, Betty, I would have wanted Betty there. I want to cross-examine Betty.
Right.
Betty did not come to the trial. She said that she was her son was sick. She cared a lot about her son. And so she stayed home. But then during one of the during the sentencing, you know, people were looking for her and they heard like a laughter from the street, and they look out and it's Betty hacking it up, laughing up a storm with the friends on the courthouse steps. Like, are you kidding me?
No big deal.
Like, yeah. No big deal. So that is just, I mean, it was mortifying. So it doesn't take long, you know, for them to decide that, or the judge to decide, which, you know, this didn't happen that often in Missouri, to be clear, that he needed to go. He needed to not be put up in the Missouri State Penitentiary.
Right.
He needed to be executed. And so this trial took 2 hours. And then a couple days later, he came back and he said, you know, you're guilty. Like, you're going to hang. He wasn't surprised, of course.
Of course not.
So he ends up, you know, the trial was on November 13th. That's pretty quick. It's less than a month after they found the body of Belle. And they said, I mean, the judge just ripped him apart, as he should have. And so They sentenced him on November 16th, and he was scheduled to be hanged on Friday, December 17th. Like, Merry Christmas, you know? And actually, May, his other daughter, was adopted out almost the exact same day that he was executed.
Wow.
So, yeah, which is kind of bizarre. It hit the newspapers almost at the same time. So the judge said, the murderer has been found in him who now sits before me, the self-confessed murderer of his own 3-year-old child. Your flimsy excuse that the child was quarrelsome and disagreeable to your wife's 9-year-old son cannot be accepted by the court. The motive must have been more powerful one. And it, if another may have had any hand in this crime in you, meaning Betty, in your hours of confinement and solitary meditation, find nothing to soften your hard heart and disclose the truth that you are simply not human. Thank you, Judge. Thank you.
And then he gets sentenced to hanging.
Yeah.
Now, and it becomes the first hanging ever recorded on film.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. So November 28th, don't forget, he swallowed glass.
Right.
To kill himself.
Right.
It probably just was real painful coming out. I'll just put it that way. He survived. So they wanted to charge Betty with basically abuse, right? And I have bad news for you. She was never that. Eventually, they did try her in June the next year, and she was found. It was a hung jury after 36 hours, 6-6, split down the middle. So the woman walked away from the whole thing, which is just great.
Right.
I will tell you what happened to her, though. So in any case, they sent out specialty cards to the sheriff, 150 guests, because this is a big deal. We're going to hang somebody. They even borrowed the noose from St. Louis and it hung a couple other people. So they knew it worked. They always covered them with a black hood. They took a black hood from 3 executions in Kansas City. I'm like, this is did anybody wash this stuff? I don't know what's happening. Anyway, they scheduled the hanging for 11 o'clock in the morning at the Old Liberty Courthouse, and they have it in the back entrance. And so they block it all off with fencing and the whole thing. And of course, everybody wants to see this happen. It's like, you know, old Roman times watching, you know, I don't know. So they actually ended up starting the hanging early. He went inside and they're like, are you ready? He's like, yeah, let's go. And he had like a long night that night. So they hung him at 10:36 or something in the morning. So early. So people hadn't even gotten in.
Right.
So there wasn't a full crowd. But what was hiding in the fencing was an old camera. And I don't mean a kinetoscope, the film camera early version.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1897 for crying out loud.
Right.
So this very ambitious man who ran the Edison company out of Kansas City got permission, you know, maybe paid for permission, I don't know, to film the whole thing. And so there was 1,000 feet of film. They said it was like 46 images per minute. So just short of on time, if you will. And it was an 11 minute when it was put together film. And before the execution, the company interviewed him on there was actual footage of his voice confessing to the crime. And they're like, we'll dub this stuff together and we got ourselves a blockbuster hit here.
Sure.
So that it happened. So after, this is wild to me. So he dies. It takes like 11 minutes for them to pronounce him dead. I think his neck snapped, of course, immediately, but whatever. Right. It takes, they pull him down. They get all that on film. And you think like, well, you know, what are you going to do now? Oh, I know. We'll do an exhibition. And in Kansas City, Missouri, we will release the hanging of William Carr, which was the name of the film. You know, we'll release it on Christmas Day.
Yes.
Like, what?
It's a good day for movies. Still is. Always has been.
I mean, like, family, I've got a treat for you. We're
going to
go see
movies.
The hanging of William Carr happen right up the street. Yeah. So they were going to do it. And then it turned out, I think it was crowd size, but whatever. And we can joke all about that. But I think it was crowd size. But they said there was a problem with the film. I think there was a lot of pushback on it. But in the end, they did have this film. It was shown in Kansas City and St. Louis, and then made it all over the country. And it was one of the earliest films. It was the.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
First filmed execution in the entire world.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.